edition of Common Kaisers. I'm your host, Chris Eaton, and joining me, as always, is...
Adiani Nohosa. What's up, guys?
There you go. Our apologies. Arian's internet's a little wonky, I think. For some reason, this is our second try, a little behind the scenes. Ironically, for what is the shortest movie that we've... There we go. So... When I edit this, I'm just going to put like a file photo of you, kind of like how the Simpsons gag does with Homer with the 8,000 cigarettes in his mouth. So, yes. So, if you're watching the video version of this, Arian is going to be his he's probably going to be popping in and out. We're having a little lag issue on his end. So, our apologies for this fine quality show.
My fault. It's always my fault.
It's good. Arian, how in the hell have you been? It's been a minute since we did one of these. Life has been busy for all of us. So I unfortunately have had to delay recording of a couple of things. But let's get the people caught up. How you doing? What's going on with you?
I'm doing really good. I don't know if we recorded since your birthday, but happy birthday.
It's been a little bit. Yes, it's. I'm 40. Halfway to the grave. So, yes. Arian is a young pup compared to me. He's what, a tender, what, 34?
Yeah. As of this court recording, yes.
Yeah. Because someone else has a birthday coming up pretty soon, too. Time is not kind to any of us. We cannot fight it. It is like the sea. So, I think the last episode I put out was right around my birthday. That was the Guyver 2 episode that we recorded covering the 30th anniversary down here in my neck of the woods, which was a – goddamn, that was a fun time. But we're not here to talk about Guyver. Oh, yeah. We're going deep cuts on a little movie called Electric Dragon 80,000 volts. I almost said 8,000 volts. That's not enough. It's 80,000 volts. This is pretty much the definition of the movies when we were talking about putting this show together that I wanted to cover. Arian has never seen it before. So much like when I introduced him to the wonderful classic that is The Seventh Curse. He got to properly view something that he was unaware of. So a little backstory with this. This isn't so much a movie. It is a narrative, but it's only 55 minutes long. It was a V cinema title, if you will. And I believe under most guidelines, it is considered a short, even though it's not really short at all. It's about an hour long, but it is chock full of wonderful film. Like this is something that high school Chris would have gone gaga over. I didn't see it till maybe I was like 25 or 26. This is definitely something special. Arian, your first experience with this film, with just quick thoughts, because we can't really break this movie down like we do normally because it has a very simple narrative to it. And like we said, it's very short, but it is chock full of visual accoutrements, if you will.
So there's your life before Electric Dragon 80,000 volts. And now there's your life after Electric Dragon 80,000 volts. And for a brief hour or a couple minutes, and you're watching Electric Dragon 80,000 volts, and you're seeing everything. Like you're saying, like, oh my god, that's where Hooty Cooty got that idea, or this is where that's, you know, like, oh my god, hey, is that the guy from Ichi the Killer? Hey, there's a whole lot of a visual feast. There's a lot to look at. There's a lot going on where you have to watch it more than once. So you understand the movie as it is, but watching it, you're like, you take everything in and you're like, this is great. The soundtrack is almost the whole character. the two main characters, the voiceover is done by a wrestler. I read this correctly.
I believe so. Let me see. Who was the narrator on this? This was the narrator. It was. Masakatsu Funaki, who is one of the badasses to ever grace the Japanese ring. He was actually, tying it back to the kaiju of it all, he was in Godzilla Final Wars as one of the generals of the mutant army.
Oh.
He shows up when they have that battle against Ibaraya. But for MMA fans, he was one of the co-founders of one of the greatest proto-MMA organizations on the planet called King of Pancrase with Minoru Suzuki. And he is a dude's dude. He is, he's had a wonderful career in pro wrestling itself. But if you've never seen King of Pancrase, many MMA greats came from there. Ken Shamrock, his brother Frank, El Guapo himself, Boss Rutan. The idea behind it was these guys were legit shooters. Like these are martial arts guys. And at the time when Pancrase was formed, MMA was kind of in their infancy. Like UFC was around, but they were still like video rentals at Blockbuster and being held like at Indian casinos, like out in, the deepest part of Canada. Because it was considered, a blood sport where these two, Suzuki and Funaki, they're like, hey, pro wrestling's big here, but we want to do something real. So they took the idea of pro wrestling, they took some of the pageantry, if you will, and applied it to real shoot fighting. So none of the matches were fixed; they were all legitimate fights. They fought in a ring. You could throw kicks. You were mainly like focused on grappling and submissions. And there were no punches. There was no closed fist. You could not throw a closed fist punch, but you were allowed to slap. And the great Boss Rutan himself took that as a challenge. He's like, all right, I can't punch, but you know what I can do? I can hit with an open palm, and developed a technique of like popping people in the face. So when I say Funaki is a man's man, he is a genuine pioneer of the great sport of mixed martial arts that we know today. But he's, like I said, he's had his dalliances in the film industry as well. And narrating a movie like this is perfect for a man of his quality, if you will. But as you said, he's not the only person in this. There's two other actors. One is, I'm reading this off so I don't butcher it. Masatoshi Nagase, who plays the aptly named Thunderbolt Buddha. Come on. How could you, you want to talk about badass names? That is a badass name. And of course, there is the.
What's his job?
He is a TV repairman. He's a satellite technician who walks around Tokyo wearing half a Buddha mask over his face and just goes about his day. But quietly during the night hours, he's a vigilante taking out crime lords and uses his electric powers to hone in on these crime bosses. And then the other lead is the great Tadanobu Asano, who for Western audiences, you most famously would know him as Hogan from the Thor movies. And he was also Raiden in the last Mortal Kombat movie as well. But he has been a big fixture in a lot of Japanese films. Most famously, he was in Ichi the Killer. He was the guy with the Glasgow smile. So the man is a powerhouse of an actor. So how this little movie came about was it's directed by a gentleman who he goes by many names. Just for the sake of my pronunciation, I'm going by his one name, Shogo Ishii, who has a long laundry list of films. He's known for a lot of punk rock films in the 80s. Most famously would be Burst City, if you've seen that, which was a very kind of like avant-garde punk rock film. While he was doing a movie called Gojo, which got a release over here, starring both of these men, he decided to do this little side film as they were wrapping up production. So, and as you can see, this movie is shot like in five locations, like in and around Tokyo. Like there's, I think they're in Shinjuku the most of the time. There's a couple of spots that, that I recognize, but it's of artsy film, if you will. I think that's a pretty much a good way to kind of sum up this thing.
I'd call it a really long music video.
That's also a perfect way to say it too. Just to give you guys the general rundown, because again, this, it is a narrative and there's maybe about 45 lines of dialogue altogether in this movie, which means one line of dialogue, you know, every minute and a half, 2 minutes. But as Aryan said, it is the music in and of itself is a character. But essentially it's about two men. We get both of their backstories, kind of. And one, as a kid, was climbing an electric tower, gets struck by lightning. It affected his brain, where he was unable to control his more primal impulses. So he started getting in fights a lot. And they tried to treat him with electric shock therapy, which enhanced the powers he got from being struck by lightning. And it gave him the ability to communicate with lizards and play the electric guitar. And he's an angry dude who is also like a Ace Ventura style pet detective, just hunting down, you know, pets that get lost in the cityscape. Meanwhile, you have, which by the way, that is the aptly named Dragon Fist. hold on a second. Oh, Dragon Eye Morrison. Dragon Eye Morrison and Thunderbolt Buddha. If I was making a student film, these are the names of the characters I would have come up with. Like, everyone kind of gets on Pacific Rim for wacky character names, but there's a certain level of badassness you want to add to your characters. So Thunderbolt Buddha, similar, struck by lightning as a kid, developed electric powers. During his story, we get the we get kind of the feeling that he has a dual personality problem, because we see him fighting with himself. So it's kind of like a two-faced scenario. So the Buddha half, yeah, is trying to kill his non-Buddha half. And there's a ridiculous scene where he's literally trying to hit one side of his body is trying to electrocute the other side of the body. But the rhyme or reason to any of this is never explained. It's just given that, like, yeah, he's got a little bit of a personality disorder. And these two men go about their days in Tokyo until one day they happen to just cross paths and realize, oh, we cannot exist in this world. We are one and the same. Thergo, we must fight. And fight that they do. Essentially, Buddha steals one of Morrison's pet lizards, drives him nuts, and breaks into his house, wrecks his shit, and causes him to, like, you know, fight. And the whole reason is, I want you angry so that that way we can clash. And that is the movie. That is 100% the movie. But my God,
yeah.
my God, is it a visual feast? So this whole thing is shot in black and white.
Yes.
To the point, there was a what up until about a year and a half ago, I could have swore this was an eight like a early 80s movie. Not realizing, no, it was produced in the year 2000 and released in 2001. So this was an aesthetic choice made by the director, but it works because it's just, it's a, such a noirish looking film that is, I dare say, has shades of Tetsuo, the Iron Man, in the way that it's shot and cut. Because it's a lot of hard, fast, kinetic cutting. Not to the point where you're like, oh my God, I'm sick. But it's just, it's, it is part of the visual storytelling of this movie. Like, it's phonetic. It's in your face. And every time that there's something going on, there's just this old school punk rock music just blasting in the background. That you're like, I have no idea what's going on, but I am loving every goddamn second of this thing. Arian, some thoughts, if you will.
What sticks out to me a lot is, yeah, you're right. You can compare this to Tetsuo the Iron Man, which I'm sure if you've heard of this movie, you've probably seen it. The music is what sticks out to me the most just because of how cool it is when he's walking around the city and those, these camera angles that follow Morrison around. The whole, you watch the first time expecting a story, at least I did, and it's one of those, it's not the the end of the journey, it's the friends we went along the way type movies. It's like, don't worry about a plot, just enjoy what you're seeing. And I guess that goes with the guys who did the soundtrack were, what's his name, the main actor?
It is, yes, the soundtrack is done by, actually it's the directors, Punk yes. Noise outfit. They're called Mach 1.67. So it's the director's
band. I guess they played this movie in the background of their shows. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I would love to see that. Mm-hmm. And like, that's why I said, this is a 50 minute music video, because everything from the visuals to the title cards, who I guess the director made or one of the actors made. It's, movie was made on what, $20? $20 and a bag of beers? Like,
if that, this was a very cheap film. I mean, they're still shooting back in 99-2000, so they're not using digital cameras. This was all clearly shot in film, and there's very minor visual effects down in it, some like rotoscoping, but everything else is in camera.
Yeah, it's a really cool movie. The more I talk about it, the less cool it gets. Actually, like, you need to go see this movie. It's like trying to explain, like, oh, have you heard this one band? And you're like, oh yeah, well, they're like this. And it's like, okay, well, that's cool. No, go out and see this movie. Go find it. It's on YouTube right now. That's how I saw it. Did you did you have the Blu-ray?
I actually own the Discotheque DVD. I bought it when it came out back in like 2009, 2010, which is now wildly out of print. It goes for like $120 on eBay. I know that because I was like scrolling through. I'm like, oh, this has got to happen. Nope, it's way out of print. And apparently Discotheque did a very limited run. The sad thing about this movie was that much like its companion film Gojo, which shares none of this stuff with it. Gojo is a period piece samurai movie. Both of them were wild flops, apparently, that shuttered the production company that funded them, which is sad because this is one of those that would play beautifully at like midnight shows. Like if you were to put together like a film festival or like, you know, like a once a month, like midnight showing, like you could pair this easily with a double feature with like Tetsuo, because they're both very short. Tetsuo, I think, is only like 63 minutes. It's not a long movie either. So you can get like a full, you know, almost 2-hour experience out of both these films, and they would complement each other very well. Not just beyond the black and white, but both of those movies are very, like, their soundtrack is a integral part in the storytelling. They're both wild out there ideas that seems like the both directors are like, look, I got an idea for a cool thing. It doesn't fit anything narratively very well. It's just, I kind of want to just do this. Like, it does feel like at times this was like a college, like, indie film that a bunch of friends got together and they're just like, we want to do something wacky and wild, but it's done by a seasoned director. So it doesn't have any of that, like, oh, you know, because it's got real actors in it. It's got real, you know, it's got production value. Like, the people behind it, like, they were already, the director was already about 15, 20 years into his career when he's like, I'm going to make a little weird artsy film. And it stands out heads above because, unlike Tetsuo was, that was, I believe, the first film of, why am I blanking on his name? Normally I can pull it up at any point and then when I put it on the spot. Looks like.
But when I see him, I can't put a face. I can't put a name to a face.
It is, yeah. Like. And I, you know, Shinya Tsukamoto. God damn it.
There you go.
Yeah. So yes, I know that other, like, American directors, like Tarantino has cited Ishii as like a influence on a lot of his work. Again, he's been making movies since the early 80s. And if you watch Burst City has a lot of similar themes, but there's no, this is actually technically considered a tokusatsu film by many people.
It's a way of life.
Very much so. Where this is considered like a weird tokusatsu film, like V-cinema style. You're listening, it's like, what the hell are these guys talking about? Like, this is one of those films that is, it's a little hard to describe. But the best way I can put it, let me put it this way. If you have watched Scott Pilgrim, Edgar Wright's triumphant adaptation of Brian Lee O'Malley's fabled comic book, the opening sequence when Sex Bomb starts playing and they're playing the credits and you see like all the scratch like art playing over the credits, that is this whole film. This whole film is that opening sequence. And to the point when I was rewatching it tonight, I'm like, I really wonder if Edgar or someone on that set was watching, like, they had seen this movie and they're like, that, we're going with this aesthetic. That's what the aesthetic of this movie is. It is the opening of that Scott Pilgrim movie. But done for 50 minutes with a dude searching for a missing lizard who, when he gets mad, he can summon an electric guitar like Thor summoning Mjolnir. And a dude running around in a Buddha mask who murders a mob guy who uses his cell phones like the revolvers. Like, he has them in holsters and pulls them out. And every time he flips it, there's just a little like piece of sound that just, you hear the, like, the movie does focus heavily on the audio. Like, it is as much as it is visually kinetic, it is also orally kinetic, the sound, not the mouth.
Orally?
Oral. Yes.
Not orally.
Yes.
Orally.
Yes. Really? And to the point when these guys start, when they had their climactic battle at the end, it's just this phonetic onslaught on the senses. I mean, the way it's shot, like when they're throwing punches, like you're getting, it's quick cut and at points, like you don't even see the impact because it's done with like still frames. There's like moments of them like just quick cutting between like some some just still frames to, and it's just the Foley over it. But you're getting the whole point. Like, at one point, Morrison is getting the crapping out of him by Thunderbolt Buddha. And Thunderbolt Buddha makes the wild proclamation. He's like, look, the lightning bolt that struck me gave me the power of 2 million volts. Where you only have 80,000 volts. And, like, kind of hands his ass to him on a silver platter. And Morrison's like, I'm not taking that. And they're fighting on top of this rooftop, and there's an electrical generator next to it. And Morrison pulls, like, the conduit lines and starts shocking himself in the head. Like, because when he was young, he was getting the electric shock therapy, like, on his temples. And he does it charging himself, not unlike the great Ernest P. Worrell in the fantastic movie that is Ernest Goes to Jail when he obtains electrical powers. Very similar to that. And starts punching Thunderbolt Buddha so many times as he's proclaiming, it's like, look, I only have 80,000 volts, but each punch is 80,000 volts. If I punch you 200 times, that's going to be that many more volts going through you. Like, you're sitting there, you're like, you know what? Yeah, the math adds up, and I'm buying this. So, and the whole point of these two fighting is the fact that Buddha's like, oh, you're like me? We have to fight. It is 100% a dick measuring competition by two guys who were struck by lightning and have weird powers that just go about their day. I mean, right. Morrison, when he, like, his lair, it's not even an apartment, it's like a lair. Like, it's just filled with geckos and iguanas, like, staring at him. And it's covered, like, in tinfoil, and he sleeps on a bed that looks like the slab that Victor Frankenstein made the monster on. It's wild. Absolutely wild.
Yeah. Look, the first 5 minutes of this movie are kids getting into fights and being electrocuted right afterward. If that doesn't, this kid climbs a pole, gets electrocuted, then he goes to school, fights this other kid, gets electrocuted again, and
breaking up a little bit. Please stand by, people.
Gets strapped to that same Frankenstein bed.
Yeah. All right, you're there. You're there. We got you. We got you. It just, you cut off during your. Yeah. So we're just repeat what you were saying, because you got cut off there.
So the first 5 minutes of the movie is a kid climbing an electric pole, getting electrocuted, going to school, getting in a fight, getting electrocuted again. And every time he comes back, he's a little bit older until he becomes a boxer, where he fights, loses, and gets electrocuted again. Until you finally find out this is Morrison, our guy, who's going to be a pet detective, like you said, a reptile, a lizard detective.
Lizard, he likes his lizards.
Inspector.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how he's making his money.
Because he's a dragon, get it?
And the whole opening does give this wonderful narration of, you know, awakening of the dragon. Like, there's these just classic 16th century, like, Japanese art pieces of dragons and stuff explaining awakening of a dragon. And then, yes, then we get cut to Morrison as a kid being struck by lightning on top of a tower, and just pretty much going from there. Now, my only thing I would say, like, as crazy as this film is, and I get it, they're on limited budget, there was a point when I watched this movie the first time, I'm like, I would expect them to be, like, throwing, like, electrical bolts at each other, or at least when they're punching, you know, you're seeing, like, King Kong style when he's fighting Godzilla, like, electricity come out. I get it. It's probably, again, this thing was probably shot, like, on, you know, $3,000. I think they shot it over, like, 5 days or 8 days or something like that. But I get it. It's you're not there for the flashiness. You're there for the experience.
Yeah. And that's what this movie is, an experience.
100%. It's, again, like I said, like if you're like I said earlier, if you're listening to this, you're like, what the F are these guys talking about? I'm going to put the link to this movie in the show notes, and I'll probably post it on the Facebook group for the Catch a Kingdom podcast, because this is such a weird film. If you're like, if you're a bit of a film snob, like I kind of am, you're probably going to love this thing. Like, it is avant-garde as avant-garde gets, but with a punk rock like undertone, like, and not even like modern punk rock. This is, it has the feeling of deep late 70s, early 80s, like just like industrial, like punk rock. Like, it's just, it's a lot of loud, heavy music coming at you. Just embodying the spirit of the movie, if you will. Yes, it's,
if you want to be cool. Mm-hmm. If you want to be cool, this is the movie to show people to prove that you're cool. This is like, oh, you know about Tetsuo? Well, you don't know about 8,000 Dragon Bolts.
It definitely is. It will probably get you some credit amongst your film nerd fans, because I brought this movie up to a lot of people, and very few, if any, know about it. And if they do, they are well educated in Japanese films, especially very cultish Japanese films. I mean, the 2003 was a great banner year for Japan, putting out like really interesting stuff. I mean, we had Battle Royal, we had this, we had Ichi the Killer, you know, Mike was really making his mark. Versus came out around that time. So it was a great time in the Japanese film industry. This is the type of movie, when I say I want creativity brought back, this is what I'm pointing at. Like, film doesn't always need to have like a structural narrative. You have to get the point of the story across, but you can do it in so many other ways. Like I said, there's maybe like 40 lines of dialogue completely in this movie. It's not a silent film by any means, but it is conveying its story in the visual art of filmmaking. There used to be a lot of people that would try this stuff. I mean, feels like very much like early Sam Raimi stuff, but nowadays, I don't know. I don't know what happened to that creative spark, but it's lying dormant if it's not dead. And I want it back. I kind of want it back. So, yeah. And also, the death of the video market has kind of put a kibosh on some of these films. I mean, you know as well as anybody else, the V cinema market was massive in Japan. And it's pretty much... Huge. Yeah. I mean, they're still, God bless them, because they're keeping physical media alive over there. But that market doesn't seem to, it doesn't seem to be as thriving as it did back in the 80s and 90s. There's not as much experimentation going on. And as people say, well, you know, you got YouTube. I don't see any of this kind of crap like on YouTube. I see a lot of people trying to do fan films, and that's about it. More of this. Like, if you're like a up and coming film student, maybe check this out. It might inspire that spark of creativity that, you know, that I am 100% saying is missing in today's film world. Like, there's no auteurs really anymore. Doesn't feel like anybody that's coming up is really an auteur. Everyone is just kind of copying something else. This movie definitely has its own style that, you know, I've not really seen. I've seen very few of any really copy. And like I said, I brought up Tetsuo, but even then, it besides the black and white and phonetic style, Tetsuo is a very different movie from this in of itself. There's, you know, like, a, you know, I said earlier, there's some comparisons, but they stop at, you know, the visual cues, and they both go in their own wild directions. So, yes, that sounded very mundane for what is arguably a very wild music video film, as Arian would put it.
Go watch
but like
it.
Go watch it. Definitely go watch it. It's
not really. It's free.
It is free. I mean, it's on YouTube. Anybody can watch. It's an hour long. Pull it up. Give it
out of this recording.
Yes. I would say just, pull up your TV's YouTube app, search it, turn off the lights, because you want the full, like a good theatrical, like viewing on this, and just let it ride. It is subbed, and the thing I love about the way the Japanese speak, everyone speaks in this with like a very masculine tone, if you will. So, and if you love punk rock music, my God, you're going to love this movie, because it is 100% like a neo punk rock movie in amongst other things that it is. So, but yeah, that's Electric Dragon, 80,000 volts. I know. Yes. Yeah. This is a weird episode. I wanted to cover this for a while. And then once I sat there watching, I realized there's a lot and not a lot to talk about with this movie, because it's so weird, but it's so beautiful. And I'm just hoping against hope that anybody listening to this who's never seen it will be able to watch it. I got Arian to watch it, so I
go up.
I consider that a big, big win. Real quick,
yeah, go
because
up.
We've only been doing this for like 40 minutes. I want to get your quick thoughts, because Jessica and I will be doing our big review of Godzilla and Kong next weekend. But I wanted to get your quick thoughts, because Arian is a massive Godzilla nerd, and I need your input on what the latest offering of the MonsterVerse did for you.
That was a lot of fun, man. That was a lot of fun. It's a Showa movie. It's a Godzilla versus Gigan / Megalon type movie. I went in cold. I kind of knew who was going to show up. I didn't really look at too many trailers. I knew Scar King and Shimu and all that stuff was going to happen. Surprised by Mothra, surprised by Tiamat, and there was this other Titan. I don't remember. But
Scylla? Yeah.
There you go.
Big crab spider.
Seeing the evolved form looks a lot better in the movie than it does in toy.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think about the Stegosaurus spikes on the tail?
I dug it. I'm not mad at it. Best character is going to be Zuko by far.
You realize, I just watched it a couple hours before we sat down and record this, and my first viewing was a little tainted by a couple of things, so went in better with a clear head and saw it in 4DX. And my God, that movie is trying to buck me out of the seat the entire time. But on the second viewing, I'm watching as I'm kind of taking in more of Scar King's little kingdom, if you will. You realize Zuko's Scar King's kid, right?
No. I didn't realize
he's that. Orange. All the other chimp apes are kind of a darker color, little orange dude. And you can clearly see Scar King's got a harem going on up on his throne. That's Zuko's his boy. Being the king has its rewards, as they would say. And that's when I walked out of there, I saw it with our mutual friend Lenny. And I told him, you realize in this movie, I told him, Zuko's Scar King's kid. He's like, no. And then he sat there thinking, he's like, oh my God, he is. And as I told him, spoilers, but the end of the movie is Kong going to fight Scar King, who isn't the, he's not a powerhouse. He's a tactician. He's very much Starscream from Transformers. Just a real piece of shit. Kind of politician-y kind of ape. And I'm like, Kong went in there, beat the crap out of him, took his kingdom, and now is raising his kid. If that's not like a Chad move. I don't know what is, but but it's it was a nice little thing. I absolutely love what Legendary has done with Kong. You realize that we're living in a world where these two characters, one is 70 years old, one is 91 years old, and they are more popular than ever. If that's not a good time, I don't know what is, Aryan.
Yeah.
Kids love King Kong again.
There's a lot. there's a lot going on. I remember the 90s and, you know, the mid 2000s, or sorry, the 2010s. Mm-hmm. There's a drought. There's a lot. There's a lot to live for. Good time, man.
Very much.
Enjoy the way.
And I'm just hoping that Toho has one more announcement for their 70th anniversary. So hoping for something animated. Hoping.
Maybe.
So, all right. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up this episode. If you like what you hear, you can find more of us at the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. That's where our main show is held. You can download that and this show as well from there. Or if you don't like downloading, you can find us on all of your favorite streaming services. That includes Spotify. I don't think Stitcher's around anymore. No, they're dead. Apple, or wherever you find finer podcasts. Remember to subscribe to the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast feed, because you'll get this show, our main show, and all the other little shows we do here and there that don't quite fit into the podcast narratives for our two main shows we had going on. You can also find us on social media, X at the Kaiju Kingdom, Instagram at the Kaiju Kingdom, and Facebook.com/the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. And if you're listening to this, also I do have a YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/the Kaiju Kingdom. And yes, you can watch. I'm slowly getting through archiving all of our past episodes, but all the new episodes with wonderful audio and video of our lovely faces, you can watch it there as well. So on that note, that'll do it for this edition of Common Kaisers. All right, do we have an idea what we're going to do next?
We're about to talk about that right now. As soon as we...
Okay, so we're still figuring that out. Normally we've had these things popped in, but it's been a minute, and we haven't really had a chance to talk. So thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.
Have a good night. Have a wonderful time. Bye.